Chief James Trosper from the Wind River Reservation in Wyoming. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing some of your time here in Europe with us.
Yes, the first question that you have here is about visiting Europe and my view of modern civilization. And I think that, you know, a lot of these questions will kind of run together, because mm-hmm. the second question talks about the excellence of nature and mm-hmm. and how we as Native Americans or American Indians look upon civilization.
Yes.
And I think that that's something that is really important to us as Indian people. In visiting here in Europe, we've attended some of the most beautiful cathedrals, you know, that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. They're very beautiful, and one of the cathedrals that we were at a few days ago talked about how long it took to build the cathedral. Mm-hmm. And I think that it was in the late 1400s when they started, and they finished in the 1600s, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a span of 200 years or so. Yes. And you think about the father maybe that was working in a certain particular trade as he was building the cathedral, and I'm sure that skill was passed to his son.
Yes.
And his son worked his life doing that work there, and then that was passed to his son. And mm-hmm. so you think about how many generations that took mm-hmm. In order to complete a cathedral. And, you know, and I thought about that in comparison to our view and what we would consider our cathedral. Mm-hmm. And really nature mm-hmm. is our cathedral. And when we go to the mountains, the beauty of nature and what God has created, that's our cathedral. And through that, we are able to see the love that the Creator has for us through the nature that He's provided, the beauty that He's provided for us. And to us, it's a sign, you know, to us of His love for us mm. and His care and kindness toward us. And I look at civilization, and, you know, our people, the Shoshone people, my father is Arapaho, mm-hmm. And they come from the Algonquin mm-hmm. People who were along the east coast of the United States and up into Canada.
Arapaho.
Arapaho. Mm-hmm. They're from the Algonquin mm-hmm. linguistic stock. Uh-huh. There are some major linguistic families within mm-hmm. the United States that most of the tribes belong to, mm-hmm. those major groups.
Yes.
And the Arapaho belong to the Algonquin. Mm-hmm. On my mother's side, the Shoshone belong to the Aztec. Mm-hmm. And the Aztec were down in the Mexico area, California. The people that speak that language, the Euro-Aztecian linguistic stock, mm-hmm. the people that belong to that linguistic stock are the Paiute, Shoshone, Ute, mm-hmm. Bannock, Comanche, mm-hmm. and of course the Aztec. And there are others. It's a large family. And the Shoshone been to the California area and out into the Great Basin, and we're called the Eastern Shoshone because we're the farthest east of that group. And the Comanche broke off of the Shoshone in the 1700s and moved toward Texas and Oklahoma area. Uh-huh. But, you know, of course, a lot of people are familiar with the Aztec Empire and the civilization that they developed.
Yes.
But I think, you know, even with the development of civilization there and the things that were created, they always held to the idea of that respect for nature.
Yes.
And I know that, you know, there were things, the people in that area, the cultivation, the irrigation systems. One of the areas that the Aztec occupied was, there wasn't very much land, but there was a lot of water, in a huge lake, and they built these almost like floating gardens.
Yes.
They had a structure, and they were able to put sod on top of that and plant food on that. And so they had these floating gardens that were really amazing technology that they had developed. And but like I said, through all of this, you know, I think that anthropologists are able to go back and look at the tools that they used, and even the astrology and astronomy that I think that people are kind of developing more of today. But I think that, you know, the group of people that we belong to, the Shoshone people, I think that there was something about them and something in them that caused them to want to move away from that. And probably one of the reasons why the Eastern Shoshone ended up where they did, you know, and so far away from that. And I know that when the tribe would start to get too big, they would split into smaller groups, which were called clans. And within those clans, then it was decided in the large gathering with the whole tribe where each of the clans would go to, so that those clans could live in those areas without overgrazing or overusing the land, and be able to rotate areas, and so that there never was that overuse in a certain area. And so those are the kinds of things that I think, you know, that were always in the back of their minds when they were making those kinds of decisions. And
this practice of splitting the population of a place, is this still practiced by the Shoshone?
Well, you know, today it's different because, you know, we used to have the clan system was really strong within our tribe. Today, now that, you know, we're very fortunate because my great-grandfather, his name was great-great-grandfather, his name was Chief Washke.
Yes.
And he was one of the last chiefs to live the old way and kind of moved our people into the new modern era. And he negotiated the treaty, and I feel like was very visionary in the decisions that he made and where he wanted his people to live. And even the people that he chose as allies, you know, he chose them very carefully. And, you know, he saw the non-Indian people or the government as one tribe. He didn't see them as the white race against the Indian race. You know, he saw the Crow as one tribe, the Arapaho as one tribe, the Sioux as another tribe, the Utes as another tribe, and then the white people were another tribe. And he chose his allies well. And he decided early that the white people were a group of people that he wanted to make an ally. And so they really needed his help at the time because they were weak in that area out on the plains. And the area that they had to cross through was called South Pass. And without his assistance, they couldn't cross through there because that was, you know, that was their homeland. And just this, the narrowness of the pass through that area, through the Rocky Mountains, he had control of that and really could have prohibited anybody passing through there. But because of that alliance that he made with the government, they were allowed to pass, but then we also were allowed to choose where we wanted to be. And he reserved part of our original homeland for our reservation, which was very fortunate. A lot of other tribes didn't have that choice. They were moved out of their homelands to other areas. So he was very fortunate, and we're very fortunate that he made those decisions.
So Wind River Reservation has been a Shoshone settlement for a long time.
It was originally the treaty was signed with the Shoshone. The first treaty was signed in 1863. The second treaty was signed in 1868, and it was considerable less land. But you know, there were things in the second treaty that he had asked for, you know, housing, education, some other things that he knew. You know, he talked about education, and I noticed that's one of the questions here that that we'll be getting to. But he had really encouraged education for our people, and you know, the way that he said it was that I fought for our land, fought to keep our hunting grounds, our land, this area. You know, I fought for that, and you know, there were times that he had to fight, even with other tribes, you know, that wanted to move into and claim that land. But what he said was that I fought, you know, to keep this. And today, education is the weapon my people will need in order for them to keep it in the future.
Yes.
And so he really advocated for education. He knew that it was going to be important for our people. And today, we've started a nonprofit for education, and it's in memory of him, of Chief Washke. It's called the Chief Washke Foundation, and it's so that we can raise money to help people from our reservation to be able to attain an education. One of the things that he, I think that was a little difficult, you know, you had asked about the reservation and if it was the Shoshone Reservation, and it was in the beginning, but he signed the treaty in 1863. They wanted to renegotiate the treaty in 1868, and he did that. But then in about 1878, the Arapaho, they were in an area in Colorado, and their homeland was in that general vicinity. My grandmother, her grandfather was one of the chiefs of one of the clans. He was one of the leaders of one of the clans. Because the Arapahos did the same thing, that they would split up and so that they wouldn't overhunt or overgraze in a certain area with their horses. But he lived in the Fort Collins area in Colorado. And the tribe, you know, would gather together at certain times of the year, and they were all together. The Arapaho and the Cheyenne were all camped in an area called Sand Creek. And at Sand Creek, there was a man, Colonel Shimmington, that was stationed in Denver, and they hadn't ever seen actual battle, and he had wanted to have that experience, and for political reasons, and knew that the Cheyenne and Arapaho were camped on the Sand Creek, and so he took an army out to Sand Creek, and the Cheyenne and Arapaho leaders were told that if they flew the American flag, and if they flew a white flag, then anybody that came across them would know that they're at peace. And the president had even given the Cheyenne chief a peace medal that he was wearing at the time, and most of the men had left the main camp because they had gone hunting. It was getting cold, it was getting into winter time, and mostly the women and children and the elderly were there still in the camp. And when they saw the cavalry coming, everybody was frightened, of course, and they went to where the chief's camp was, and they knew that if they were there because the white flag was up and the American flag was up and he was wearing this peace medal, that they would be safe there. So they all kind of gathered around him, but the cavalry attacked them anyway and killed a lot of women and children and elderly, and was really sad. And so part of the Arapahos went to a reservation in Oklahoma, and today they're known as the Southern Arapahos. Also, there were a group of Cheyennes that went to the reservation there, and so they're known as the Southern Cheyennes. They're all on the same reservation in Oklahoma. But the Northern Arapahos and Northern Cheyennes fled, and they went up into the Montana and Wyoming area. The Northern Cheyennes were in Wyoming, and I don't know what all had happened in between that battle that massacre at Sand Creek, you know, and the last time that they were attacked. But my great-grandmother, her name was Elizabeth Little Owl, and she married a Friday, and I knew her. I'm not sure exactly how old I was when she passed away, but I remember her very well. There's just a lot of things that really stand out in my mind about her. But one of the things, you know, that the older people would always take the children, and, you know, it was under their tutelage that education was passed on to the younger generations, and the parents were usually too busy trying to provide for the family. They're young enough to work, you know, and do the things that they needed to provide for the family. And so the elders were usually the ones that took the children and taught them. And I remember my great-grandmother taking us and, you know, in a sense, you know, so that the parents could work and do the things that they needed to get done, but at the same time so that the education process could happen. And, but I remember her telling us and teaching us a lot of things. And I remember that story that she told about the last time that they were attacked. She said that she was around about 12 years old or so, and that there were different clans within the tribe. There was a clan that really felt strongly that they were going to be attacked, and so they had left the main camp and they hid. There was a clan that didn't believe, kind of laughed at the others, didn't believe that they were going to be attacked at all. And she said her clan stayed with the main camp, but they were prepared to leave. You know, they had everything ready because they weren't too sure what was going to happen. And she said she belonged to that clan, and her parents had told her that her responsibility was to get her baby brother to safety. And so she said the night before that they thought that they might be attacked, she said she couldn't sleep. She slept with her clothes on. She kept her moccasins on. And she said, sure enough, early in the morning, before the sun came up, she said she could hear the guns and the shooting that they had attacked them. And she said the bullets were going, she could hear them going through the teepee. So she got her baby brother and she knew the area, these caves that she was supposed to crawl to. And she said as she was crawling through the grass that she could hear the cavalry running back and forth. And she was trying to stay hidden.
Yes.
And she was trying to keep her baby brother from crying and crawl at the same time, and she said she could hear other children also crawling through the grass. But eventually she made it to safety, to these caves, and she said when she looked back, everything was burning. She said all their winter supplies, all their clothes, their teepees, everything was burning. And she said it was a huge loss because they were just preparing for winter. And they ended up going, having to go to the reservation. They were one of the last tribes to be brought in. All the other tribes had already been assigned a reservation. They kind of just looked at the Arapahoes as the renegades of the plains because they hadn't come in yet. Or nobody had brought them, you know, was able to bring them in. And finally, they gave up and they were brought in. They were coming through Fort Washkee. It was a military fort at the time, and they were coming through there, and Chief Washkee knew Chief Friday from rendezvous when they were kids, that they both had attended, and so he knew him. And he asked, you know, the cavalry that was bringing them through there if they let them rest, let us feed them and clothe them, and then you can take them to wherever you're taking them, but they're not going to make it if you don't let us, you know, help them. So through that friendship, they were allowed to stay there. Was supposed to be for a year. They told Washkee it would be for a year. But then the government never came back and got him, and then basically told Washkee that it was now half of their reservation, that his reservation was half of it was going to the Arapahoes. Of course, he was really disappointed because of everything that he had done for the government. And so considered the Wind River Indian Reservation today. But both tribes, it's called the Shoshone and Arapaho Reservation. And, you know, there's still some animosity and still some bitterness. And, you know, the government, I think...
Between the two tribes.
Yeah. And I think that the government probably thought that if they could put groups of people who didn't get along with each other, because they were traditional enemies, they had been for years before that, they weren't allies at all. The Arapaho allied with the Cheyenne and the Sioux, and they were all enemies of the Shoshone. And so, and I think that, you know, the government knew what they were doing. You know, they've done that on several reservations where they put enemies together, probably thinking that either they would kill each other off or that they would be so busy fighting with each other that they wouldn't pay attention to anything that was going on with their land on a state level or a federal level.
But you're in a good position to be a mediator, aren't you? Because you have the heritage of both?
It's really interesting because I lived with my grandpa and grandma, who are Arapaho, when I was younger, and then of course I moved back with my mom, mm-hmm. and then lived in the Shoshone community for the rest of my life, and then I married she's an enrolled Shoshone, and my children are enrolled Shoshone, and we live in the Shoshone community, and mm-hmm. but I would never choose one over the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would be like choosing one side of my family over the other side, yes. or saying that my dad's family is better than my mom's family, mm-hmm. or my mom's family is better than my dad's, and I just would never do that.
Mm-hmm.
I love both my dad and my mother, and I love their families.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that any decisions that I've ever made or ever will make in the future will always be for the best for both.
Yes.
And how that plays out, whether or not I'm able to be a mediator or not, definitely I hope that people will understand that I do have a deep commitment to both,
mm-hmm.
you know, to both sides.